You're listening to Highlights from the Creative Process interview with Stephen Riley, attorney, entrepreneur, and founding director of Reem Museum. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
I work for the director of Crystal Bridges, but let me tell you a little bit maybe how I got there, and then I'll talk about how Alice Walton built the amazing ecosystem to support the arts in Northwest Arkansas. I'm by nature a professional lawyer, entrepreneur, an art supporter, a collector. I've been on the boards of museums in Louisville, Kentucky, where I live, and in New York. I love seeing what artists can do to help us reshape our vision of the world. In 2017, I became director of the Speed Art Museum, Kentucky's oldest and largest art museum. It was, in effect, what I called a 90-year-old startup at the time. It had reopened after a complete closure for a large-scale renovation. And so my work with my colleagues was to figure out how to bring it life. And we were able to innovate and try a lot of new things in service of its mission. When I left that position after an orderly succession in 2021, I spent a lot of time thinking about the challenges of museums, how it's so hard to cover their budgets and their expenses outpace their revenues, how their assets often act like liabilities, and how their own rules have sometimes made it hard for them to innovate. And what I didn't know was how Alice Walton, with a great entrepreneur and philanthropist named David Booth, were having similar conversations at that time. 20 years ago, Alice Walton began with a crazy, bold vision. She envisioned this place called Crystal Bridges, a Museum of American Art, which opened a little over a decade ago, and today attracts over 800,000 visitors a year in a region, Northwest Arkansas, with only 500,000 citizens, and in a town with only 40,000 residents. So Alice thinks big, and she thinks differently. They came up with the idea of putting together a project, which became Reem Museum, which I run, in their words, to help museums break out of these legacy systems and become more innovative. So I joined the project early last year, gave it a name, and now I'm trying to figure out how do we help museums in that effort of becoming more creative, more innovative, how to break out of their legacy systems, matter to more people, and thrive. So 30 to 40 years ago, the average American art museum said that its purpose, its mission, was to preserve objects for the benefit of the public. The public in a very passive role in that formulation. Today, it has dramatically shifted, and our own research has documented that 90% of American art museums now center the public in their mission statements. They say that their purpose is to serve and engage the public with art. 60% of them don't even mention objects or collections. And yet, are they really doing the things to reflect and serve these new missions? In fact, when you look at them, their policies, their norms, their degree of transparency, which you mentioned, their budgets, seem to be much more anchored and aligned with their past missions than with their current missions. What we showed in a research project we released earlier this summer was that while the missions may center the public in the art museum's stated purpose, the transparency and the information they share does not center the public. And only 17% of American art museums share both their number of visitors and their consolidated financial statements, something that's really a base level of information. They all have these information. They all share it with their boards, but they don't yet share it with the public. So part of Reem Museum's work is not just to promote innovation, but to ask museums and boards in particular to hold themselves accountable to the missions and the public that they serve.
It's strange times because at the same time, museums are fighting for eyeballs. There's all this digital distraction. At no other time, I think, has the average person felt so empowered in a way, even without having art training, to maybe create or co-create something that is artistic, though the AI co-creators might be taking a heavy part of that burden. And at the same time, this period of flourishing creativity outside the museum then is a competition as well. People are so often experiencing the work of art outside of the museum that sometimes it doesn't necessarily draw them in to see the physical works of art, or sometimes I think can make it hard for us to experience the work of art with fresh eyes.
All that I agree with. I think you've caught exactly the challenge and the opportunity for museums. The opportunity is that we have never had a public that is more passionate and obsessed with visual imagery. And so that's what museums have the opportunity to take advantage of. If the owners of the best original imagery in the world can't figure out how to take advantage of the fact that the world has now become obsessed with exactly these treasures that we have to offer as museums, then shame on us. This is the opportunity to say, if you're spending all day scrolling on Instagram or other apps looking for amazing imagery, come and see the origin source. Come and see the real work. Let us figure out how to make that connection. At the same time, we need to be learning from them because there is a threat and there's a lot more innovation, frankly, going on in the visual world outside of museums, whether it's apps like Instagram or Pinterest or commercial art enterprises. Many people are finding these immersive art experiences are a wonderful way to get to know and love the art of mainstream artists like Van Gogh or Monet, and the museum field generally looks down on that. And I understand it's not necessarily deeply art historical. It's not trying to transmit a deeper degree of knowledge. And yet, how can we learn from them? How can we learn from the Sphere in Las Vegas, which is employing artists to connect with musicians and give tens of thousands of people a day a way to experience visual art in a new way? The question is not, museums might say, well, I don't want to sell out. That's not the question. The question is, how do you tap in to that energy that the visual imagery is creating for humans all across the country that museums are failing or are not feeling like the places where the public can come experience? There are exceptions. I think that in the world of AI, museums are really doing interesting work. The Museum of Modern Art last year worked with the great artist Rafik Anadol to create a work really grounded in the permanent collection of MoMA in a revolving, mutating, explosive giant screen of AI art. And I saw people sitting in the lobby at MoMA transfixed for hours by this work. It was a great new entry point for young people, for people who might not have felt that the art at the Museum of Modern Art was for them, to feel that, yes, this place was leaning into them. Many art critics scoffed at that, whether that was real art or not. But if you looked at the eyes of the visitors, it was art in their eyes. And that's, we have to be a little more expansive in what we share for audiences whose minds may be growing faster than museums are.
Indeed. And for us, and it relates to our project, it's maybe engaging more with the viewer's understanding of the creative process or the different layers that go into a work of art, which I think is always something. It's great to visit a museum, but it's also great to revisit it in your mind when you go back into your communities, into your schools, and then think, how is this made? It's a more intimate experience, I think. And so with these multi-sensory exhibitions, it offers that. And what are some of the other unconventional and innovative ways that or formats that you're exploring in order to increase diversity in exhibitions and also bring art into the community to attract visitors who might not typically visit a museum?
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could take credit, but what I try to do is shine a light on examples of great innovation in the field. So happy to share a few, and we can talk about others over the course of our conversation. One that really excites me is the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Been a very successful museum, archiving and presenting the legacy of Warhol's really crazily important career and art to Americans, but also living in a city that's struggling a lot and actually attracts more tourists than it does people from Pittsburgh. So as they thought about that conundrum, they looked at the community and they realized they could develop a program by employing young digital creatives from the community, a majority of whom are BIPOC or LGBTQ+, and they pay them to generate content for the museum. So they're creating digital content to promote the work of the museum, making it more relevant to young people like them in Pittsburgh, which is, of course, the mission of the museum, to matter to the people in the community it serves, while also taking work from outside contractors and developing careers as digital creative talents in the marketplace, getting degrees from the Carnegie universities, and going out into the community with better jobs. So the museum, by kind of breaking out of its previous preconception of its purpose and how to do its work, is now making the artwork of Andy Warhol more relevant to the community while also providing work and jobs to the community at the same time. And as a result, they've attracted millions and millions of dollars of foundation support from Pittsburgh community foundations that are saying, we're not just happy that you're a great museum. What we're really happy is you're leaning into your mission in this new and creative way. Another example is a company based in Columbus, Ohio, called Orange Barrel Media, and they make really creative digital billboards. Architects design them, they feature artists' work on them, and they generate revenue for the people who own the real estate where they're based. They've done these in commercial locations from Sunset Boulevard to Manhattan, and now they're working with museums and cultural institutions, which are all often located in really valuable pieces of land. And what they're doing is not just generating revenue by selling billboard space, they're actually helping get the museum again out of its own walls, advertise its programming, which many people who drive by the museum may have no idea about, and presenting digital art on the screens as well. So the museums are getting a win-win by generating revenue by also driving more mission-related relevance to the communities they serve. So what I'm excited about is the museums that are hunting for these new ways to matter to people. As you said, touching a chord in kind of the hearts of creativity. People want to be creative, want to feel connected. Many museum practices have made people often feel disconnected to their own creative souls and talents. How do you actually make it show that the museum really wants to support creativity among all the people in the public?
And we've seen a lot of crossover. As you say, you mentioned technology, but of course how the sciences are, of course, creative and the visualization of same, there can be a great transdisciplinary possibilities. And how are you increasing or looking to expand more engagement along those lines?
I think in terms of education, what I'm intrigued by is the ways people are looking at it in all different sources. You know, some museums are attached to schools. One of the ways I think museums are doing is trying to connect the audience with the act of interpreting the art itself. What we know and have known for a long time is the public wants to be engaged. They want to see interpretation, the way that the art is made relevant, be more of a dialogue and not a monologue. They want to actually be engaged in it. So one great American museum hasn't made this public yet, but they're going to start opening their exhibits long before the galleries open by creating digital content and letting the public engage with the creation of the exhibition long before it actually opens in the museum itself. I think the museum of the future is going to be much more open to the creativity of its audience. And rather than view it as a layer of expertise that can only be shared on terms of the experts, the work and the relevance will grow in the depth of it if they actually engage their audience, whether it's school children or the public, in the way they're showing the art. I'll share one quick example. There's a brilliant woman named Joyce Tsai who runs the Clifford Still Museum in Denver. And when she got there, they said, well, Joyce, we have a specialty in early childhood education, and we've been researching it, and we have programs around it, and we actually have a show of Clifford Still's art that's been curated by infants. And Joyce is very bold, but also and really smart, came out of academic world, and she said, that's nonsense. I'm not going to belong to any museum that's letting infants curate the shows. And they said, give us a chance, let us explain it to you. And they showed how they had actually presented art to literal infants who couldn't walk yet. And their reactions in their eyes showed the human reaction that translated to the reactions of older children and adults. And they literally did use the reactions of these infants to prepare and curate a show of Clifford Still's work for the general public. And Joy said, okay, I'm sold. She said, not only that, we're going to continue making this a special niche for the Clifford Still Museum. We want to build artist housing that actually supports artists with children. I'll share one quick example. There's a brilliant woman named Joyce Tsai who runs the Clifford Still Museum in Denver. And when she got there, they said, well, Joyce, we have a specialty in early childhood education, and we've been researching it, and we have programs around it, and we actually have a show of Clifford Still's art that's been curated by infants. And Joyce is very bold, but also and really smart, came out of academic world, and she said, that's nonsense. I'm not going to belong to any museum that's letting infants curate the shows. And they said, give us a chance, let us explain it to you. And they showed how they had actually presented art to literal infants who couldn't walk yet, and their reactions in their eyes showed the human reaction that translated to the reactions of older children and adults. And they literally did use the reactions of these infants to prepare and curate a show of Clifford Still's work for the general public. And Joy said, okay, I'm sold. She said, not only that, we're going to continue making this a special niche for the Clifford Still Museum. We want to build artist housing that actually supports artists with children. That's just one example to show when the museums think a little differently about how can we share the art, who's there to help us figure out how to share it, how to interpret it. The work actually gets richer. And rather than the fear that we're going to lose our authority or confront disrespect because people won't appreciate our expertise, I think the museum, by opening that up to the public, actually increases respect. It doesn't need to be a mystical temple that's only controlled by the sacred priests and priestesses. It needs to be a place, a living and breathing kind of church where everyone has a role. I certainly don't want to sound like the role of the curator is diminished in a reimagined role for the museum with its community. I think it asks curators and educators and museum leaders to really lean deeply into their own missions and to the communities they serve without fear. That's another thing. Artists don't have much fear, right? It's the amazing thing about them. And I think museums would do well to copy artists in that respect as well. What I tell my children is to embrace the future and be prepared for the new ways of work, of engagement, of citizenship that it may require. Because the only thing about the future is it shows us that many of the ways that we've been doing things are deeply flawed. And we have to always have the capacity to unthink the things we've been taught and the systems that we've adopted and embraced, which continue to create a lot of good, but also figure out how to balance them with better practices for the future.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.